This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Big Brother Australia VIP. I'm your host, Sarah Carradine, podcasting from the unceded lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, which at the moment is under construction. So if you hear some construction noise in my background, I do apologise. And I'm here with visibly impressive personage, Amy Chan. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Sarah. I was waiting for some sort of reference to me being a very important princess, given what's happened this week. But I am here going tropo in Whoop-Whoop on Wiradjuri land. I was concerned about what was going to happen this week based on the first episode we had last week about the very important princess. But I think at the end of the day, fair dinkum, she'll be right. It ended up being a pretty dead snet rip snorter. And we got the good fun that we want from reality TV instead of royal gossip. So very excited to get stuck into all of that with you today.
Yes, Big Brother does like to break our hearts and then beg for us to come back. And, you know, we always do. So we are going to be discussing the third week of the Big Brother Australia VIP episodes. Plenty of spoilers. So if you want to watch first, hop off now and go and watch and come back. Otherwise, just follow us through and we will tell you everything that's good.
Yep, exactly right. I'm feeling a little bit like Jess this morning. I'm not sure about you. My face always takes so much longer to wake up than my head. But I will try to focus and we'll get stuck into all the nitty-gritty details.
I think I'm the opposite. I think my face might wake up first.
I don't even know what that means, really.
I don't either. But, you know, I'm continuing my growing love affair with Imogen, and then Jess got me this week. Now I'm in love with her as well. So it's sort of almost irritating that Big Brother VIP has done its job on me, and I'm now very fond of all of them, and I want them all to win.
Yeah, it's been interesting, hasn't it? Like, I think the cast, when you look at them on paper, doesn't seem that impressive. There is definitely a question to be asked about whether the VIP tag is really something that that should be applied to this cast. But as personalities, they've really grown on me. I think we've seen some other sides to some of these characters that we have never seen before. And it's been really quite touching. So, yes, I'm with you. I've grown to love all of them.
I think it's, this is at the very base of reality TV is seeing people and getting to know them under these kind of strange and extraordinary situations. But, yes, I mean, even Dane got me this week as well. So I am very fond of them. So let's talk about them. Doesn't mean we'll hold back on our critiques, but just know that we're feeling very warm at the moment. So let's get straight into the shenanigans of episode 7. So we start in the aftermath of Bernie's eviction. Ellie's still reeling, I think, from the shock of Luke. She was determined that Luke was going to go home and then Luke was no longer available to be voted for. And Bernie was her strongest ally. And I think she felt she had such a strong grip on the game and that grip has completely gone.
Yeah, definitely. Her core alliance has broken up. So now that Bernie's gone, I think she's now a little bit suspicious of Luke, and suddenly she's exposed in a way she hasn't been before, given she was so dominant in the early part of the game. I wonder if one of the reasons why people are turning away from Ellie is she does strange but endearing things like eating stir fry from breakfast.
That's in bed.
Breakfast choice. Yes. Very odd. I have to say that is actually my preferred way of eating breakfast in bed, and I do tend to find actual traditional breakfast food quite boring. I'm not really into cereal and toast and things like that. So I like the idea of eating stir fry for breakfast, but I do know from having travelled with other people that other people think it's very freakishly weird. So I wonder if this is why Ellie's Alliance has chosen to depart from her. She eats weird things for breakfast.
I eat anything for breakfast. Cold pizza, fried rice, soup, toast, eggs, nothing. Just because it's morning, you can have whatever you want, I think. So
I totally agree with that.
I'm glad. Well, if we travel together, we will not be judgmental of each other's breakfast choices. That's very good to know. Now, Dane and Jess really get into it in a way that we haven't seen before. I think there's some frustration mounting, and neither of them are going to back down. And it's a very peculiar argument. Dane is very dismissive of Instagram, and I think that's fair enough. Why shouldn't he be? He can be. Jess quite reasonably explains to him that it is her livelihood and that he is dissing her livelihood. And he says, no, I'm not. I just think Instagram is stupid. And she says, no, Instagram is my livelihood. You're just my love. No, I'm not. I'm just saying it was this very strange, complete inability to get on the same page. And I think this is a little seed that's planted that is going to pay off in the episodes to come this week.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is an element of Dane really didn't want to take Jess seriously here. He was quite dismissive of her and her career. And I think there is definitely an element with Jess and Imogen that they both often have trouble expressing themselves in a way that is articulate to other people. So I think they're sometimes given to fly off the handle kind of reactions, which we see later when they find out about the twist from the elimination, that their ways of expressing emotions do not necessarily come across to other people, I think, in the way that they are intended. So I think here Jess actually does make quite an effort to say, you know, I don't diss your art. What if I was to be dismissive of your art? But when he's not on board with that, then she just kind of retreats into saying things like, I'm going to punch anyone in the face who doesn't vote him out. And that's not really what she means. What she's really meaning is I'm frustrated because I'm being talked down to by somebody about something that he doesn't know anything about. So he's expressed his opinion. I've expressed my opinion. My opinion should be respected. But that's not what she is actually saying in real life. And so this is really where you start to see the girls turn away from Dane. And I think this is when Dane starts to really be in some serious trouble.
Yes, I mean, I think that's very insightful. It is actually hard to explain what an influencer does. It's hard to explain how some people earn a living. I have friends, I really don't exactly quite know what they do, and I know a lot of people don't know what I do, not really. And when it's this strange, apparently amorphous online identity that Dane doesn't know anything of, that's fine, but listen to her. She will tell you about it if you are truly interested. So it's just a little bit of misogyny there, of dismissing her because she's a pretty girl that, according to him, sort of makes money on her looks. But it's a lot more interesting than that, more complicated and much harder work, as we were discussing last week.
Yeah, I do think the thing with Jess is she does kind of revert to these kind of outlandish statements as a bit of a defence mechanism. So on the one hand, that's very entertaining TV where she talks about she's going to steal Imogen's pig if Imogen doesn't vote for Dane the way that she wants. So it's quite hilarious, but at the same time, I've really enjoyed in the last week seeing how there are so many layers to Jess, and actually what is going on underneath the surface of that is something quite different, and I think something that the media in general and the general public has resoundingly been very dismissive of. People just think of her as some sort of, for want of a better word, some sort of whore from reality TV. She's whoring herself out, people think, literally and figuratively, in the way she's chasing publicity, in the way she's expressing her sexuality, when actually there's a very complex, clever, compassionate person underneath that nobody is taking the time to show. And the way she is so defensive and the way she reacts and talks and speaks, I think doesn't help that situation. But for me, I found particularly this week has made her very endearing because I can see she's actually a very vulnerable, sweet girl underneath. And all of that other stuff is just bravado, which is perfectly natural and understandable if you think about the way the media has persecuted her in the last 12 months. So I think good on you, Jess. Stick up for yourself. Don't let anybody mansplain and talk down to you. You know what you're talking about. You're making $11,000 from one Instagram post. Who cares what he thinks?
Absolutely. I was got quite a thrill when I heard her say that. I thought, yes, you go, girl. Sorry to burst out into that. But, yes, I have found this week in particular she really has made good on her Instagram post about I want people to see who I really am. And I thought, oh, well, you know, that's all very nice, but I'm sure we already know who you are. Well, more fool me, because we didn't know, and we are getting to know her, and I find her charming and endearing. And in fact, the huge tantrum that she and Imogen have was brilliant. I thought, yes, why should you be polite? Why should you take everything? Show your feelings, rampage around, and, you know, they got it out of their system and moved on instead of repressing it. So I thought it was fantastic. And they were enjoying themselves while they did it and not caring about what other people thought. So I liked that a lot. Now we get a very peculiar diary room from Josh. Josh is singing He Had It Coming from the musical Chicago. Not a song I thought or a musical I thought would come easily to him, joined by Luke. They both sing it. So maybe it's just that song is so in the cultural consciousness that they were able to pull it. But they're singing about Bernie. He had it coming. Josh in the diary room says he's exploded the three, Bernie, Ellie and Luke. Interestingly, Josh put Luke in that three, whereas we know from Luke's DRs that he was sort of softly playing backwards and forwards. And we sort of understand very much in the hotel that the gender divide is opening. That's how it's seen by everybody. I don't know if it's strictly true, but the way that the housemates are talking, it seems very much a gender divide now, really overtly. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I thought this was a very clever editing choice to set this up like that. I think that certainly the housemates did seem to think that there was a gender divide, and that's very quickly undone later on. But I think in the beginning it does seem quite obvious, doesn't it? The four guys, the three girls, even if you look in terms of physical appearance, the girls are all quite similar height, they're all blonde, the boys are all fairly similar height, fairly similar build. So it kind of makes sense in a way they gravitate towards each other based on gender interests, particularly the girls do a lot of bonding in the bathroom while putting on makeup. But in the end, it turns out the strategy wins the day, and I was glad to see that because I think it would have been, I would personally have been uncomfortable if this became a game all about gender. And I'm glad that we got rid of that quite early on.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's set up so strongly by both the show, the editing and the housemates, only to dissolve over the three episodes. And I think that's really clever storytelling. So Jess and Imogen are complaining about having nothing to eat. So, again, we get this nothing to eat. There's nothing to eat. They just mean there's no flaming Cheetos and cheese stringers.
Imogen's turning into a rice cracker. It's food, isn't it?
She never wants to see another rice cracker again as long as she lives. It's food. It's food. Some people don't have food. So Big Brother tells them to go to the backyard for their shopping challenge.
Yes, so this is essentially Big Brother's task to the food whinging. Who is the biggest whinger about the food? Unclear. Everybody's pointing fingers at everybody else. Certainly the two girls have been whinging a lot.
Luke says it's Dane. Yes.
Yep. Luke says it's Dane. So they're all whinging about the food. I think Josh was whinging about the food quite a lot as well. So they're given a shopping task where they have to stand in front of two post boxes. This is going to run for 24 hours and fan mail will rain out of the post boxes at random times in random batches. They have to work in teams of two. Whenever Big Brother fires a siren, they swap teams, and essentially the number of fan mails that they can catch will equal the amount of money they have to spend on food in the house.
Jess is thrilled because she says she's dying from no attention.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, here's a missed opportunity to raise money for charity, to talk about charity, to plug their charities. Instead, it's very much focused on them raising money for snacks, basically, is what it is. So We start with a really hilarious little montage of Josh, who wants to change into some shorts and ends up getting caught with his pants literally down around his ankles as Big Brother decides to release the fan mail as Josh is trying to get changed.
Yes, I love that. Big Brother loves trolling. Josh in particular, it seems. Luke says that this competition requires concentration, patience and quick hands, and this is the voiceover of a montage of him missing letters right, left and centre.
This whole section I really enjoyed. I thought it was really, really funny. I've come to really like these 24-hour shopping challenges where they have to do random things in the middle of the night to no apparent purpose. I like how they start to sort of talk about Seinfeld-like moments within the challenge, talking about, you know, Ellie's using a crocodile technique, Luke, Dane and Josh are complaining the girls can't catch any letters. And so the whole thing was, I thought, really fun and funny to watch.
Yeah, I like it. It's simple to understand. You can get the task straight away and then you can watch them failing through their own incompetence, or they might be failing for a different reason. Big Brother calls Jess to the diary room for a secret mission, and she's completely thrilled. Her secret mission is if she drops all the letters, then she will have a treat in the diary room. Jess doesn't take a moment to decide that she's going to betray everybody. She says, suckers! She knows what she wants. So if Jess drops everything that she is supposed to catch, she will get treats, and she can ask one person to come and have the treats with her, and it's no surprise that it's Imogen.
These are not treats, Sarah. This is a full-on Vegas-style buffet of food. They get fruit platter with nuts and juice. They get lychee martinis, sundaes covered in ice magic, a massive bowl of lollies and chocolates, lamb cutlets, roast veg, bottles of Shiraz. I mean, there's no way those two girls could possibly have eaten the volume of food that Big Brother brought out into the diary room. It was actually hysterical. There was more than enough food. They could have shared it around with the whole house. But instead, it was just the two of them sneaking the food in the diary room. So funny.
They are going to pay for it later in a very amusing way, which we and Big Brother and they know about, but the housemates, I suppose they know about now if they're watching the show. So my question to you is, would you take this mission? So you're taking potential shopping money away from your housemates in order to eat what turns out to be far too much food. Would you take this mission?
Definitely. This is not Survivor. They're not starving. Not really. I think it's a different thing when you put this in a Survivor context where people actually don't have any food and one cup of rice is a full meal. But nobody is actually dying out here. So I think the spirit of the concept of Big Brother VIP is to lean into all those stereotypes about receiving fan mail, dying from lack of attention, dying because you don't have lobster to eat every day. And so I definitely think part of the fun of it is to do the challenge and take on the secret mission and steal food from other people. That's what makes it fun.
Look, I'm glad they did. But strangely enough, I was thinking if it was Survivor, I would do it. Here, I'm not sure. It certainly was starting to make me feel ill, the amount of food they had. But again, that was part of the challenge. So we get the delightful view.
Wait. Can you just tell me why would you do it on Survivor and not do it on Big Brother?
Because on Survivor, it is the solo, I need to feed myself so that I'm strong enough for the next challenge. Whereas in Big Brother, there's plenty of food. There's plenty of food. And we're about to get some shopping. I would use that. I would come out and say, Big Brother offered me this, but I want to make sure that we get shopping. So I would build up social capital in the Big Brother house by refusing the food, because as you say, there's plenty of food. I don't actually need it. Whereas on Survivor, I do need it. I do need those lamb cutlets. I do need those jelly snakes for quick energy for the challenge that's to come.
Yeah, see, that's interesting, because to me, the social capital on Survivor is food. So anytime you are seen taking food when other people don't have food, so as recently as last week, I think it was, some survivors won a reward challenge. They went to eat. They came back and Ricard just wanted to have a bite of papaya and he got absolutely slammed. So to me, the political stuff happening around food in Survivor is so sensitive, you do not want to be caught taking food that other people are not getting. Whereas I think in Big Brother, nobody cares. So if you got extra food and they didn't get cheese stringers, I don't think anybody's going to vote you out of the house because of that.
Well, in my version of it on Survivor, nobody ever finds out, but I suppose all bad deeds come to light in the end.
Yes, exactly.
So we get the wonderful view of Jess and Imogen pretending to catch the letters. At first they just simply don't catch the letters, and then they realise they have to pretend to be catching the letters. They don't catch any letters at all.
No, the whole thing was strange because in the end Big Brother said there were 298 letters that flew out, but they were only able to catch 46. Even if you discount the letters that were deliberately missed by Imogen and Jess, there were still so many shots of these letters flying out. Surely at some point they were able to figure out within 24 hours what the trajectory of the letters was going to be, where most of the letters were falling, and then find some sort of method to actually catch the letters. I was surprised at how few letters they actually managed to catch, given how many came out.
Yes, oh, I agree with you. Instead of $2,980, they get $460. I mean, $460 is a nice amount, but there was never a moment where they talked about strategy of how to catch them. Perhaps they weren't as hungry as they painted themselves to be.
Yeah, and once again with Big Brother, the whole strategy of the purpose of this makes no sense to me, because after they've gone to all this trouble to earn their shopping money, Big Brother gives them a full smorgasbord of grilled burgers and fries anyway.
So that's right.
They need to go shopping.
And Jess and Imogen now have to front up to the table and pretend to eat the burgers because they are so full. They are stonkered. And they can barely get another bite in. It's very funny.
Yeah, exactly. So I wanted to raise something with you that I've seen as a consistent theme throughout the season, Sarah, and this is Tom going to get sunburned? The amount of sunbathing that that man does, he's always lying there roasting away in the Australian sun, no rash vest, definitely no hat, seemingly no sunscreen. How does he not end up like a full lobster?
He probably has a slathering of sunscreen, I would have thought. I have noticed that he was sunburnt in the first week, I did notice. So I think he gave himself a fright and perhaps is either slathering the sun cream or doing 10-minute bathes in the sun. Yeah, I have noticed that too. He's very pale.
Yeah, it worries me, an American coming to Australia. They don't understand the hole in our ozone layer. They don't understand how just 10 minutes can lead to quite significant sunburn and heat stroke. So I'm always watching Tom lying right by the pool sunbathing, concerned that he is going to end up with significant burns and have to go to hospital.
Yes, I myself have had skin cancer long ago and no return of it, luckily. But, yes, the sun in Australia is very intense. And so, American friends, when you come, sunscreen, hats, long sleeves. Don't be tempted by the glorious sunshine.
Yeah, so speaking of coming out too hot, this is where we start to see the downfall of Ellie from her very, very, very high perch where she has been controlling and dominating the game. Essentially, Ellie now starts to play too hard. And I'll be curious to hear what you think about this, Sarah, but to me, the whole reason why we see the girls turn on Ellie is all to do with she's just playing too much. Instead of just gently, she really goes out and tries to control the narrative for everybody. So first we see her approach Luke and Josh and tell them Dane is targeting them. She approaches Dane and tells him the opposite, that Josh is targeting him. And Jess sees all of this and she sees the intensity with which Ellie is communicating with the boys, and she thinks Ellie has flipped, when actually Ellie's plan all along was to spread these lies so she could maintain her girls' alliance and get the boys to turn on each other. But she does it with such an intensity and she's so serious and such an urgency that she freaks Jess out, and this is why Jess ends up flipping on Ellie.
Yes, and this seed was planted last week when We weren't quite sure why, but the girls were saying, we just don't trust Ellie at the moment. We just don't trust her. And I think after having been on the block, her biggest alliance member going home, I think she got a fright, and instead of sitting back and just thinking more subtly, more softly, letting people come to her, she almost ramped up her game, and she was flying from one person to another to another. And one of her big mistakes is, if she was going to do that, she needed to take Jess and Imogen aside and say, I'm going to tell this to this person and this to this person. So if you see me talking to Dane, this is what I'm saying. I mean, that was Jess's thing. She's very anti-Dane already because of the incidents about him dismissing her entire livelihood. And now she sees Ellie in a deep strategic chat with him, and she misinterprets it, but she misinterprets it on very fertile ground. We don't blame her for misinterpreting it. So Ellie's error there is not setting it up with the girls first, I think. So Jess and Imogen say, we don't trust Ellie. Dane and Josh compare notes in the bathroom and say, Ellie told me this, Ellie told me this. This is this way of playing where the other players are chess pieces that are not going to talk to each other or have their own strategies. And that's where Ellie's gone wrong here, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also there was a more subtle way to do it. Now, obviously, with editing, we can't see what the actual timeline is of who she said what to when and where and how, but it does seem almost like she went to Luke and Josh and then she went straight to Dane. I think, you know, if this was her ultimate plan, maybe seeds could have been planted in a more subtle way over a longer period of time than in such a short, intense outburst, repeating the same story, which then allowed the boys to very easily compare notes and find her story short of the truth. So I think this is a, unfortunately, a bit of a failing on Ellie's part. On the one hand, we say that we want players to play. We don't want anyone coasting. I think the one really stark, obvious example of that is Tom, who is never seen strategizing with anybody at all. And when he is in real trouble, he just relies on Luke to do all the hard work. We don't want to watch that. We do want to watch gameplay. But on the other hand, I think Ellie, unfortunately, does not read the temperature of the hotel well and overplays her hand.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. You need to ask questions rather than make statements. You know, go to Dane and say, "What? I'm getting an odd feeling from Josh and Luke. Do you know what's going on with them? Let the other person's positioning, let the other person come to some conclusions. Plant some little seeds or rustle seeds that will grow." Instead, she goes to each group and makes a definitive statement. This is what this person said, easily checked when the boys get back together.
Yeah, and this is where actually you see how Luke is such a clever strategy player and why he is such a favourite, I think, on reality TV and with contestants as well, because he has a way of planting seeds without actually telling you what to do. He has a way of asking questions and probing and offering suggestions so that people think that it is their own idea when actually it was being driven by him all along. And we will see that a little bit later. We can talk about it more in depth when we come to it. But I think that's probably the difference between someone who's played a lot of this kind of reality TV strategizing game versus someone maybe who's new to it. I suspect Ellie 2.0, if we were to see her play something else, would play all of that quite differently.
Oh, Ellie on Survivor. I like that. And yes, when people come back and play, as we said before, they can, if they can be flexible and alter their game, they can often get a lot further rather than trying to play the same game they played before, as we discussed with Danny last week. Well, now we go to the nomination challenge. It's the wall challenge. I love the wall challenge. For those of you unfamiliar with it, you are strapped or holding on to in some way a wall. They start you off at slightly away from vertical, bring you to vertical, and then move you forward towards horizontal, and you have to hang on as much as you can until you fall off. Again, a very simple challenge to understand and a wonderful challenge to watch. This often is good for people with smaller feet and lighter bodies, but let's see how we go. The way they've made this wall is the wall is a series of magazines, BB Confidential magazines, and each of the VIPs will be draped over pegs in the middle of it, and they each have a headline. Ellie has Speedy Gonsalves, she's electrifying, which I thought, bit of a stretch. Luke has King of the Jungle, and then Jungle's crossed out and Hotel's written. And his subline is, will Luke nuke the competition? Let's hope not literally. Josh has Josh Carroll trending now. So they really ran out of ideas for Josh. Model housemate makes his move. Ooh, yeah, go back to the drawing board with that one. For Dane, they had a dangerous contender. Not true, but certainly amusing. And in Beams, kicks goals. Well, yes, that was his job. Imogen has a pure imagination. Farm favourite turns firm favourite. And as we've discussed before, for us, that's actually true. Jessica makes a splash. Jess powers up. Okay, all right. Think about that one again, I think. And Thomas's is, I will just read it without comment. Thomas eyes Big Brother crown, truly remarkable.
Oh, look, okay. As somebody who has spent several years working in magazines, so I have spent hours and hours and hours of my life coming up with cover lines for magazines that actually have to sell. These cover lines stink. Could production have hired an actual magazine editor or somebody who is a writer to spend a bit of time and give us some good magazine covers? These were just awful. I just can't even express how disappointed I was. Initially, I saw the challenge and thought, awesome, magazines, I know all about this. Can't wait to read the cover lines. And I didn't even bother to write down what they were. So it was very disappointing. And I can tell you, no magazine editor in their right mind would let any of those out on the newsstand.
No cap. So Thomas's strategy, he says he's going to be bug splattered on a windscreen. That sort of works well for him. Ellie says she can hold on all day. And before you know it, Tom's jumped off and he lies on the landing pad saying rather pathetically but amusingly, just old.
Yes, I can understand that. I can relate to that feeling, Tom.
Yes.
So one thing I want to know, Sarah, is why does the wool reset before it drops again every time? Why does it not just continue to tip forward? Why does it always reset back to neutral and then go again?
I think, because this is common, I think it's for a bit of relief.
Why do we want to give them relief?
Because the challenge will be over too quickly, I think, because they'll all just fall off. I can't think of another reason. I think it's that roller coaster idea of, you know, you scream on the way down, scream if you want to go faster, then you slowly ramp back up, but you know what's coming. I think that sort of terror and horror might be involved in that. I don't know why, actually. But what was your thought?
I would have just kept tipping it forward. We're not, you know, that's what we're here to see. We're not here to see them reset. Just tip them off.
There are words for people like you, Amy.
So what I did love about this challenge actually was that Jess won. And I have to say at the start of the season, I did not think Jess was going to be a contender to win any sort of a challenge. So it was really gratifying to see this teeny tiny little girl beat out the giant cockroach of Josh with all his guns and all his muscles. It was still the girl who won. And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, she says, well, that's just the two of them left. She says to him that she'll look after him and he refuses that offer. Maybe he should have taken that offer. This win by Jess is not only fantastic for her, but it's absolutely crucial for what's to come now. It had to be her that won for the series of events to unfold as they did, I think.
Yeah, so this is where I'm really interested to hear what you think, Sarah, about whether these nominations were the right nominations. So Jess nominates Dane, I think for obvious reasons based on what we've talked about for what's happened already. She nominates Thomas because he's a floater. And then surprisingly, she nominates Ellie. Now, what she says in the diary room is that she's nominated Ellie because she was playing both sides, but she's conflicted because she also wants to choose Josh. Do you think, Sarah, that this was a good move on the part of Jess to break up the Girls Alliance so early?
Yeah, it's curious. We knew she was going to nominate Dane because, as she says, Dane is 1,010,000,000,000% coming for me, which is very evocative. Thomas, he's a floater. It would be unusual in this three nominations, really, for Thomas not to be nominated. I was saddened that she nominated Ellie. As soon as she nominated Ellie, I knew that Ellie would go because of the story they're telling us is a gender divide at this point. As we said, it is going to dissolve, but it's 4 men to 3 women at this point. And putting one woman against two in the nominations kind of guarantees, certainly with the mood of the house, as we've been told, that the woman will go. Just as Ellie has made me feel on edge. And here I put that blame entirely at Ellie's feet. Ellie needed to do the Boston Rob, check in with every single one of your alliance members at least once a day. Ellie hasn't done that or hasn't done it sufficiently. She perhaps has thought, oh, I've got Jess and Imogen, so I don't need to work for them. But she's not taking into consideration who these people are. I mean, Jess herself says she's starved for attention. So if she's your alliance mate, give her attention. Give her attention. Give her attention. It's what she wants, and she has overtly said that she wants it. I was surprised that she didn't pick Josh here and have three men as nominees. I understand why she did it. I think it's wrong. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it was too early. I think she should have held on to this Girls Alliance till at least two more men went so that the girls would have the power and then you could turn on each other. But I think it was too early. And I think this nuke that she's lobbed now really just kind of blows open the whole game. So on one hand, it's interesting because with what happens later, it does shift all the politics and you can see that they are kind of playing on quicksand. They're all sort of sinking towards the end of the show, but no one can find the stable ground and nobody seems to feel like they have a solid alliance anywhere. So that's certainly very interesting to watch. But in terms of gameplay, I feel this was definitely the wrong move. But I do think it is interesting and I wonder if this part of this was Jess trying to assert herself as a player in the house and instead of being underestimated, because in the beginning nobody actually gives Jess any credit for this move at all. Even Ellie doesn't blame Jess. She says that Josh must have influenced Jess. Someone influenced Jess because Jess does not have her own mind to have made this decision on her own, which is actually completely untrue. And so I think I wonder if it wasn't a little bit of an element of Jess trying to say, I'm here, don't underestimate me. My vote is the same as your vote, so you better start watching me.
Yes, I think that could be true, definitely. For people who aren't watching the show and who are used to the US version, it is straight from the challenge to the diary room for nomination. So there's no pitching, there's no discussions, there's no huddles in the HOH room where people tell you who it is you should nominate. In fact, Jess skips from winning the challenge. She skips to the diary room to give her nominations. Now, of course, you could have chatted beforehand, but as nobody knows who's going to win, there's not none of those really solid pitching conversations. So it is odd that people don't in the house don't credit her with the move because it is very much her move. And I think you're right. I think she is planting a bit of a flag. She's tossing up between Ellie and Josh, and Big Brother tells her to trust her gut and she goes with Ellie. Then she comes out for the announcement and is hiding under things, gripping a pillow. Ellie, of course, is kind and lovely to her and comes over and puts her arm around her. It's torture for Jess, but she's sort of delighted as well. It's as if she's been very, very naughty and she's worried about the punishment, but kind of thrilled about what she did. And she very cleverly says to Ellie, you were the safe vote. You were the safe, don't worry, you were the safe vote. We know from the diary room that that is not why she nominated her. So, yes, I agree with you. I think Jess wanted to make her mark on the game. she woke up and she chose violence, and she's completely thrilled.
This is part of what I really love about Jess, is that I think she's far more self-aware than people give her credit for. I think the perception of her in the media is that she is a ditz. She just wants to be famous for the sake of being famous. She doesn't really understand what she's doing out in the world. But I think actually she knows exactly what she's doing. And I do think that there was an element of self-awareness about this vote, which is kind of interesting. Maybe there was, as you say, an element of just throw it all to the wind. Let me vote out one from my alliance and see what happens, because I'm here to play. So effort, I will play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's great. I really, really am enjoying Jess this week. I think that it's fun to watch the way she's reacting, and certainly she is the one who makes the big power move in this week.
Yes, and one of the biggest power moves we've seen in the game. And this is coming from someone who didn't participate in a shopping challenge and had everybody wanting her out 2 weeks ago, and look where she is now. Josh very amusingly turns to Ellie and says, are you still stoked that Jess won?
Yes, Josh does have that sly side to him, doesn't he?
He does. I think he perhaps expected to be the third name, so, he may be very relieved.
Yes, I would imagine he would have been. I think he was the obvious vote, so the fact that she chose not to go with him I think it says a lot about her. She's got balls to do that in a house with people that you're supposed to be close to, and to defy everyone's expectation. That's a tough chick right there.
Mm. Now Luke takes this opportunity. He thinks it's a good time to make a move on Ellie, break up the so-called girls' alliance. We must remember that they're women. We ourselves are calling them girls as well. They're called girls in the house. Imogen is a little bit of collateral damage here. I think she is genuinely upset by the nomination, confused, upset. She said she's good with Ellie, but Jess is basically her ride or die. They haven't used that phrase, but we can see that they're very much ride or dies. So Ellie, Luke and Imogen go for a chat in the laundry room, and Luke says he's going to vote for Dane. Imogen and Ellie are gobsmacked because they also have been following this gender divide, and now they understand that it's possible for a man to come over to the women's side and to vote out a man. This sounds great. Josh thinks Dane is safe. Josh wants to stack on Ellie, and they draw in Thomas. And so these are the lines that are drawn before the vote.
Yeah, Josh was already always going to vote Ellie and had targeted Ellie quite early on in the episode, but the other four all sort of come together. I do really feel for Imogen. I consistently see with her that she really struggles with confrontation. She does not want to cause problems socially where she doesn't need to. And you can see it's a real struggle for her. She's very hurt anytime anyone is voted out. And so I feel very sorry for her, because she's clearly as blindsided as Ellie is. But Ellie doesn't necessarily see that. She knows that Ellie's going to lump Imogen in with Jess and see them as a pair. And so Imogen is not going to be recognised for feeling the feelings that she's feeling, which I think is, she's scared. She doesn't want to have a big fight with Ellie about it. She talks later on, in a different episode, about how in the past Ellie has blocked her or ghosted her, and she hasn't, she's found that very difficult. So poor old Imogen, I think, is in for a rough emotional ride this next couple of days.
Yes, well, that's why I loved her having the full-on tanty in the backyard with Jess, because I felt it was her time to get some of those feelings out, because she, as you said, I think she doesn't like confrontation. It's interesting to find that there's something with Ellie in the past. We haven't seen that in her attitude. I think she's very much would prefer to be friends. She'd first of all prefer to be with animals, and then if she has to be with people, she would like to be friends, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a unanimous vote against Ellie. So Ellie is out. But then Big Brother reveals another twist.
Sonia says, hold on, Ellie, you won't be leaving alone.
This is just, and then again, I love Jess's reaction, like a kid who's been caught with their hand in the cookie jar. She's so excited. She's clapping her hands and saying, I love this. I love a twist. Yes, yes. So it's great. She can see that this has become her power move, that not only has she got rid of Ellie, she's actually, you know, broken the house wide open and will be sending two players home, and she's excited, and I think that is hilarious.
Completely thrilled. So Thomas and Dane are the only ones that can be voted for. Jess isn't voting again, of course, because she's the nominator, and it's 2-1. Dane will go, Luke and Imogen voting for Dane and Josh voting for Thomas. I think Josh is very surprised because he expected that Luke would vote with him for Thomas. That is not what happens.
No, this is interesting. I think the tides have turned for Dane by the time we got to the stage of the Instagram saga. I think the writing was always on the wall for Dane. He was never going to go particularly, you know, much further than where he was with all the girls against him and Luke very much playing off the boys and the girls. So, you know, Luke knew where the tide was going and unfortunately Dane didn't see it. Again, yep. We see Imogen, she's pretty upset. And that's just such a, you know, it's lovely to see this other side to her. I really didn't know anything about her before she came into the house. So she just seems like such a gorgeous person. And so then we see Ellie and Dane, as they're exiting the house, they decide for a little bit of payback, they're going to steal the treats. They go into the fridge and they go into the pantry and they steal the cheesy stringers, the much-coveted cheesy stringers, Jess's favourite snack that she's been talking about, and the flaming hot Cheetos that we've seen Imogen eating throughout the whole show. Hilarious.
It's not mentioned, but I recognise the packet. They take the kettle chips, salt and vinegar flavour. They take lollies. This is where I really like Dane because he is the one that instigates this. He turns to Ellie and he says, seriously, do you want to take something? And they take as much of the snack treats as they can on their way out the door. But Big Brother says, your time in my hotel is not over. There is an opportunity to get back in my game, but you will need to work. So they're thrilled. They've got a chance to get back in on a battle back, and they've got all the snacks, and that's where episode 7 ends.
Yeah, see, now I did see on Twitter that some of the fans were pretty unhappy about this, and it makes sense to me. At the time when I was watching it, I didn't think too much about the strategy of double elimination and then a chance to get back in the game. I was just being entertained, and I did find it fun to watch. I was interested to see what was going to happen. But when I think about it from a strategy perspective, it is true that this was a pointless twist. Why have a double elimination if you're just going to bring them back? We could have actually just had two single eliminations over two episodes, and that would have been the same result. It did, from a strategy point of view, make no sense, and it could potentially have been very, very bad for Jess because of the blowback that could have happened. But luckily, in the end, I think Jess is not in any worse a position than what she would have been as being the original nominator. Sorry, but yeah, this twist now of them sort of being sent off to the gym was strange from a strategy perspective.
Well, it's a 3-episode week, but they need to have only 2 eliminations so that the numbers are right for next week for the finale week. So 2 go. One comes back and then one goes. So you have 2 eliminations over. You have 3 elimination ceremonies ending up in 2 eliminations. It's a numbers trick to have the right numbers for the finale, I think.
I don't know. I think I'm a bit of a reality TV purist when it comes to this stuff. I think once you voted off, you voted off. Why are you coming back? I think I really don't like the Edge of Extinction.
I was going to say, you must be a fan of Edge of Extinction then.
Yeah, I feel like I would almost rather have them not had a double elimination then and just had one non-elimination episode from a strategy perspective. But to be fair, from an entertainment perspective, as I say, in the real time when I was watching it, that didn't occur to me. I was actually enjoying the intrigue of watching a very unhappy Dane and Ellie on the treadmill, on the the exercise machines, planning their revenge for how they were going to come back and, you know, surprise everybody in the house. So I did still find it quite entertaining, even though the strategy side of me says I don't like it.
they find themselves in the gym. Dane says, I've been asking for a tready. Big Brother puts them to work immediately. So Ellie's in her dressed up clothes on the spin bike. They all earn their place back into the game. They have an around the clock classes in the gym. If they fail to exercise through one of the classes, they will be out. But it seems that they quite easily perform this task. They're just woken up at various intervals and told to get on the bike or the treadmill or the cross trainer.
And probably that was actually good for their mental health because they're pretty angry. So I think actually having a place to physically vent all that frustration was actually very good for them. And as we know, Ellie, challenge-based, loves to work out. Dane is a former professional footballer, so this was really not going to be difficult for them to be able to do.
Exactly. They're not going to be complaining about it at all. And it's such an unlikely pair. And I think the stealing of the snacks was the beginning of this kind of beautiful friendship, however brief. They're together in their anger at the other people and in their delight at having stolen the treats.
Yep, absolutely. So we go into an evacuation. And I just loved this, Sarah. I thought this was absolutely hysterical. I watched it. I watched to the end of the evacuation, then I paused it, then I rewound it. I pulled my kids off the Xbox. I made them come and watch it. We just were rolling around laughing. I just loved the whole evacuation. Do you want to tell us about it?
I do. Well, the funny thing is that Big Brother, he is such a troll. He gets them at the moment when they are all crowded around the pantry and the fridge. First one thing isn't there, then another isn't there, and then Jess, having said in the diary room, I made a big move. I gambled and it paid off. She's at the top of the mountain. Then she says, not my cheesy stringers. And she rushes to the fridge and, yes, the cheesy stringers have gone. They're all in a kerfuffle and then the alarms evacuate immediately. You have 1 minute. They rush around to grab things. Imogen rushes back for her glass of red wine, which the others are jealous of when they all get out to the backyard. She's the only one with a drink. They've grabbed hoodies and hats and they're just not sure. They're all out in the backyard. There are five camp beds, which they see. There's a barrel with a fire in it. And Big Brother says they have lost their VIP status. Oh, and another thing, we've had some trouble with noisy neighbours. And Josh says to Big Brother, don't be a dick. Now, Josh does not take this twist very well. He is the most angry. He can see no humour in it whatsoever. He complains constantly. And he has the addition of lying beside the snoring Thomas, who sleeps through it all.
I just loved this so much. Why does Josh care about sleep? What have you got to do tomorrow? Nothing. You're just going to be sitting around in the Big Brother house. As a parent who consistently has not had any sleep for about 12 years, I have very little sympathy for this because you're not going anywhere. You're not doing anything. You don't, you know, you're not going to be shooting for the front cover of Vogue. You'll just be sitting around the Big Brother house in your tracky dacks like you have been for the last 2 weeks. So I really don't see why the sleep is such a big issue. But because he makes such a big issue out of it, it is hysterical. I just thought it was so funny. And then watching Luke, who's also not sleeping, Luke also sitting there laughing at Joss. It was just the best. I loved it so much.
Luke was laughing his ass off. So they had the noisy neighbours consist of car alarms, cats, searchlights, helicopters, everything. It is absolutely hilarious. Luke is laughing and Josh even says, I don't find this one bit funny. And, of course, once someone gets up on their high horse like that, it's even funnier. Tom sleeps through the whole thing. We know that because he snores the whole night. The girls just pull their blankies over their heads and just kind of get on with it. And Luke thinks it's very, very funny. And in the morning, Josh has a real go at Tom for sleeping. It's like, if Tom can sleep through, let him.
One thing I did feel sorry about was when I thought about the filming schedule, this would have been shot in July, August. So we are talking the depths of Sydney winter. It would have been freezing. And I did notice Big Brother seemed to have given everybody matching beanies and gloves. So clearly they knew it was going to be very cold. So that part of it I probably would not have been happy with. But the whole car alarms, the floodlights, Then once they had the helicopter with the spotlight shining on Josh's face, just hysterical. Loved it. Fabulous.
Big Brother, you have really done something fantastic. Big Brother says he has to conduct some investigative interviews to see if their VIP status can be returned. I mean, this is such nonsense, but they all take it very, very seriously. And what this means is he takes everyone into the diary room and he gets them to state why they're a VIP. And as soon as they say something soft or something that doesn't work for him, the doors opens and he chucks them out. I find this very funny too. He's trolling them.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, by the way, is Tom injured? Because he's limping quite visibly in this whole section.
I didn't notice. Tom, I'm sorry if you were injured.
Yeah, he's limping. I don't know. Maybe he is old and he's
just old.
Wakes up in the morning.
Just old. Well, they were asleep. I mean, those camp beds are about 5 feet long and Thomas would be 6 foot.
Tom's the first one into the diary room and he talks about having a half-sister. And as he's trying to sort of cash in on that, on the notoriety of being the half-sister of, you know, half-brother of a royal, Big Brother immediately says, a half-sister's not good enough to be a VIP. Get out.
It's great.
That's pretty much how we've all felt about Tom the whole season.
Luke goes in and he tries to explain why he is a VIP. He says, well, I lost twice. Psh, the door opens. He's chucked out.
Josh with no blue tick. Get out.
Get out. Imogen's the first one that gets her VIP status returned. She says, I put up with Australia's most hated man for 10 years. Brother decides that's enough. I mean, she does.
This is what I mean about Imogen. There is a vulnerability there. And the fact that she does that whole series with her beanie covering her face, which is a classic Naomi Osaka kind of way of hiding your emotions when you are out in the public and you can't retreat. That to me says that, yeah, Imogen also is very aware of how the public perception or how the public perceives her and how people think of her and her relationship with Kyle Sandilands and how that affects how seriously people do or do not take her. I found that all very moving, actually, that I've often wondered over the years as Kyle Sandilands made tabloid headline after tabloid headline, who is the partner of this guy and what is she thinking about all this? And clearly it has affected her. So I definitely think, yeah, I found that very touching watching Imogen talking about that.
Yeah. I mean, she talks about her animals, which, I mean, her face lights up whenever she does that. And she has a lingerie label coming out. So I think, well, good for her. So she's working in her own sphere while having to fight off the perception of the outside world, and I think it's hard for her, and makes it even more extraordinary that she's come on this show.
Yeah, absolutely. So after Imogen, we see Jess, who talks about lots of different things, including this is where she tells us she was paid $11,000 for one Instagram post, and so that's why she should have VIP status. But I also thought here we see Jess talk a little bit about the fallout from her time on Maths and how the person who broke up with her on live TV was actually somebody that she had fallen in love with and then felt betrayed by. And again, I thought that was really touching to see a different part of Jess from what we've been seeing just in short clips as promos on TV, to see that actually there were real emotions involved and somebody really was quite damaged after that. And I thought that was really amazing to see that other side of her.
Yeah, it's not something that we think of. We think of the moment on television when it happened, and perhaps to our shame, we don't think about the effect that that has on the people. And she tells us. Tom tries again. He says he's the only person who can say he is Meghan Markle's brother. And for some reason, this gets him his VIP status back. I don't know why, but that seems to be enough.
Yeah, the whole way the boys end up getting back their VIP status makes no sense, because they essentially say exactly what they said before, mm-hmm. but now Big Brother lets them to the house. So Josh, while eating his dry two-minute noodles, says he's a VIP because he got on the show with no blue tick. That's what he said to begin with. That was the reason he got kicked out of the diary room last time. But now Big Brother says, okay, sure, you can have your Big Brother blue tick.
And finally, Luke, whether this is actually the order that they went in or not, it is the one to finish with. He says, I came from nothing. And even though I lost again, and he lost a second time, the public gifted me the money. I kept my head held high. And then he cries and he says, I don't like talking myself up. And this is, so we're so used to the confident, the cocky, the king of the jungle, king of the hotel, and all of that. And here he is quite vulnerable, as he is whenever he talks about his family. And I think for him, the money equals providing for his family. So I was very touched by this.
Yeah, I mean, this is why Luke got given the $500,000, isn't it, on online from the public, even though he didn't win Survivor. He just is such a genuine person. You can see that at the end of the day, he's just a normal person. He doesn't big note himself. All that talk is just gameplay for him, and he is quite able to separate the gameplay from how he feels about people in the real world. And I think that's why people love him so much. He's just such a genuine, relatable person.
Yeah, for people who don't know, on his second, spoiler alert, the second time he was on Survivor, he got close to the end, didn't win, and somebody else set up a GoFundMe page for him. The winner of Australian Survivor gets $500,000. So that was the goal. It raised much more than that, but he only for himself took $500,000, and everything over that, another $100,000, I think at least, he donated to autism charity.
Yep, that's right. And then he also has a clothing label called Creepin', mm-hmm. that I believe also raises money for the autism charity. So, yeah, he's really, as I say, just seems like a really decent guy. He could have easily taken all that money and kept it for himself. People were donating it in good faith to him. They were not donating it to a charity, but he has chosen to consistently put his money to support the charities that help his family. So really, yeah, great guy.
And his charity for this show, would he, if he is to win, is the Perth Children's Hospital Foundation, where all of his children have spent time and where he feels his family has been very much looked after.
It's actually something, they talk quite a lot about Luke Tokey's family and how he has these kids with special needs, but really we never really spend too long thinking about that is a huge burden to carry, not burden, but it's a huge amount to deal with, to have three kids with special needs, one of whom, you know, has a very, very serious illness. That is a lot for somebody to carry around, and then to put themselves out in public like that, you know, hats off to him, Luke. That's really just something I think that should be admired and acknowledged a little bit more about just how difficult a situation he is in his family life.
Yes, and hats off to Mrs. Luke as well.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So after the trauma of being having to sleep in the backyard, it looks to me like the VIPs all have an afternoon nap.
Josh is probably gagging for it.
Yes. They all, when they get called to the lounge later on, they look to me like they've all just got out of bed and it's clearly the middle of the day.
Big Brother has organised a top five VIP party.
Yes, and so they're all pretty excited. There's a seafood feast. They've got Verve Clicquot. They are all going to celebrate that they've made it to the top five. And then, another twist.
Big Brother says, you are the final five. Or so you all thought. And there's a video on the screen. And who is it? But Dane and Ellie being told, clutching all the snacks, being told their time was not over, and then video of them in the gym.
Yes, and then cue the meltdown. Imogen goes into complete meltdown. She's screaming, she's throwing furniture, she's banging on the walls, shouting, is this the TV that you want? Is this what you wanted? Tom is hilariously hiding in the diary room saying, I'm not going out there. Imogen encourages Jess to join her. So Jess is also screaming. Just so funny.
So Imogen actually has a diary room where she says she doesn't want to face Ellie. She only voted for her because everyone else was. Ellie and Dane from the gym can hear them yelling. So they really are yelling up a storm.
Even from the bedroom, which I take it seems to be sort of separated by the lounge room. So you've got backyard, the giant lounge room with the kitchen. I think it's the laundry and then the bedroom. They can hear her from the bedroom. That's how loud the girls are shouting. But I think for me, this is not a tantrum about the fact that Ellie is coming back into the game. To me, this is a tantrum about having to deal with the fallout. And so it's about the fact that Imogen has been backed into a corner. She had to vote for someone she didn't want to vote for. She didn't know she was going to have to do that. And I think she just finds it challenging emotionally to process that and to process how she's going to manage a very potentially angry and unhappy Ellie. So I don't think at all that this is about being upset about the twist in the game so much as it is about being scared of dealing with the social consequences, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And here Jess shows her complete loyalty to Imogen because she goes out to the backyard and throws things as well, and they end up sort of laughing and screaming and shouting and throwing. And when we say throwing things, they're throwing cushions and they're stamping
they do
and they're jumping
up
and down. They do tip over a sofa. Good for them. I think it's great. They are relieving their feelings. We should all have a crying room in our homes where we could just go and tip things over safely and shout out to our heart's content.
Yeah, exactly. Haven't we all wanted to stamp our feet and have a meltdown like a toddler sometimes?
So, absolutely.
Yeah, so it is good to see them get it all out. It's interesting. I thought it was interesting that the fallout from this wasn't more significant. I really felt that the boys, particularly Josh and Tom, could really have played this up to Ellie and Dane and flipped the tables on the girls, tipped the girls upside down out of their chairs. But any attempts to do this were fairly muted. And there wasn't too much fallout, whereas I think this could have, if you'd really wanted to, you could have used this as quite a strategic play to paint the girls in a really bad light.
Mm. No, I'm glad they didn't, because I was sort of pleased for them in the same way. And I don't want to compare them to a toddler, but when a toddler's having a meltdown, it is difficult to deal with, but you also think, oh, my God, that freedom to just rage out against whatever the thing is that's pressing you. And you'll notice with toddlers, once they do have that tantrum, and if they're allowed to have it all the way to the end, they're fine afterwards, completely fine. Give them a nice drink and to take their attention to something, and they're happy. And I think we can actually take a lesson from the toddlers and from Imogen and Jess here that end up laughing about their own yelling and carrying on.
Well, yes, I think this is how Twitter is in Australia and the US every Thursday and Friday after Survivor 41 airs, and there's some twist or some unnecessary advantage. Everyone has their meltdown on Twitter. We vent, we say rude things about Jeff Probst, and then 24 hours later, we all agree that we still love the show, we still love the season, and it's all out now.
So yes, love
I think we all have our various versions of this, and yes. Anyone who is a diehard reality TV fan would be very familiar with these kind of meltdowns.
Exactly. So let's get to the challenge. Dane and Ellie return. They have very, very grim game faces on. There's a little bit of smack talk. Now, they're going to be competing in two teams. One team is Dane and Ellie, and the other team is the rest of the house.
So talk me through, Sarah, what is going to happen if each team wins?
Whichever team wins, the whole of the team will be safe from elimination. So if Dane and Ellie win, the other five will be up for elimination. If the other five win, Dane and Ellie will be up for elimination. So if Dane and Ellie lose, they're just automatically nominated. If the team of five loses, Dane and Ellie will pick three, I think three, for the nominations.
And winning means you have to have two people successfully complete the dominoes course.
Correct. So there's a dominoes course set up. It's a wiggly course with some corners. It's the corners that bring people down. The corners are quite tricky to get round. There's a couple of times where your domino will hit a ball, which will then run on the course and hit your next dominoes. And the final ball rolls and knocks a golden domino off the end and therefore you win, two of your team have to complete it. So in other words, both Dane and Ellie have to complete it to win, whereas only two of the five have to complete to win.
Yep, so we see this segment goes on for quite some time. They spend quite a lot of time focused on the dominoes. In the end, Josh finishes first, so he's from the team, the existing housemates. Dane finishes second from the team that was voted out. But Tom brings it home by finishing third, and this means that the existing housemates have won the challenge.
Yes, it's probably quite an enjoyable challenge to do if elimination is not on the line. It's not that much fun to watch them continually setting up the dominoes. The exciting thing is when they have a go, and certainly they show us plenty of people having a go and failing, and I mean that's the juice of it, I suppose. At one point Jess says, this is the quietest I've ever been in my whole life ever, and maybe that's true. And then another time she declares, I'm starving, and Ellie quietly says, would you like a cheesy stringer? So we get some nice backwards and forwards there. But yes, as you say, it is Tom and Josh who complete their course, and so the five are safe.
Yeah, and I must say, I mean, credit to Dane where credit's due. You know, when Matt was voted out, he was pretty salty, he was pretty nasty, he was pretty unhappy with everybody in the house. Now that he's been voted out and he has to come back, he and Ellie do, for as angry as they are very respectful, they're very mature about it. It might be a bit awkward amongst them and the other housemates, but they're not nasty and they're not bitter. And I think there is something to be said for that. It is quite hard to watch these shows when you see people return who are really angry and don't want to speak to anybody. There was none of that. Everyone did try to keep it good-natured, did try to keep it light. And, you know, clearly Dane has moved on from his initial reactions to the game and processed it. And I think that's great.
Yes, I agree. There's a bit of it's smack talk, it's front, but it's not nastiness. I think there's a little bit of awkwardness, but it's not nasty. Ellie in the diary room says she knows she's going home. And in the diary room, Luke notes that the others want to save Dane because he's not playing.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is where we see real Luke Tokey play come out. Because essentially everyone wants to vote out Ellie except Luke. And I think it's quite interesting that even Luke knows that he is the big player. He says, I'm not Bruce Willis in Top Gun saving everybody. That's a confused, mixed cultural pop.
I loved it.
I think you need to sort out your movies, Luke. But this is where we see what I was referring to earlier about the way in which Luke is able to plant seeds to influence strategy and gameplay and other people without the other people even realizing. So Luke takes Ellie aside into the Velvet Lounge and talks to her about the fact that she should pitch to the girls for why she should stay. She should say, I don't know what I did wrong. Tell me. I'm so sorry. You know, instead of acting angry or acting like she thinks the girls are coming for her, try and bring them back on board, which is exactly what Ellie does. And as a result, we can see that Luke really kind of then influences this next vote.
Yeah, so Luke says he'll try Tom. It doesn't work, but he knows well enough not to try Josh. Dane does no work at all. Dane thinks the girls won't keep Ellie because they all hate awkwardness. And what he hasn't understood is they got all their feelings out, and now all their feelings are out. They no longer have to hold on to that. So Dane really, Luke is right, Dane does not play.
No, that's it. And I think it's interesting. I think the girls also are smart. They know now that Ellie is back and Ellie's dangerous. So better to keep your friends close but your enemies closer. And so that's exactly what they do. They decide to use her to pretend that the alliance is back on, but really they're just keeping an eye on her so that they can see exactly what her next move is going to be.
Yeah, there's still the antipathy between Jess and Dane, sort of feeling that as well. Luke says that Dane hasn't said a word to him. He hasn't come to talk to Yoda. And he tells Big Brother, if I manage to save Ellie tonight, I'm a wizard with a big pot of potion.
Again, Yoda is not a wizard, Luke. If we ever meet in person, I'm going to invite you over. We're going to watch Top Gun. We're going to watch Die Hard. We're going to watch Star Wars. And we're going to watch Harry Potter because they're all different franchises.
Oh, I love Die Hard. It's one of my favourite movies.
Yes, Die Hard is a big hit in my household too.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
My children, who are probably not age appropriate for that movie, love watching it, I think because they know it's not age appropriate.
Yes.
So
I will count to two. There will not be a three.
Although there is a crossover, isn't there? Because what is his name from Harry Potter is the star of Die Hard,
mm-hmm.
the villain.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at his face.
Snape.
Yes. So
Professor Snape is the villain in Die Hard.
Yes. One of my favourite actors of all time. Cannot think of his name. Truly, madly, deeply.
Died recently.
He was in Galaxy Quest.
He was also in Love Actually. This is a riveting
big brother riveting podcasting. Yes.
All right, elimination. Dane goes home 3-2. So the people who vote for Ellie are Josh and Tom. I think Tom largely because he's not really playing. Josh votes for Ellie because he has always been targeting Ellie and he has an alliance with Dane. But Luke has managed to flip Jess and Imogen to get rid of Dane, and so Dane goes home here. And then we're off to episode 9.
Episode 9, indeed. So we have the aftermath of that eviction in the diary room. Josh says Ellie's return must change his game. He's going to tell Ellie what went down. He's going to, in other words, tell on the other girls to a girl. Never a good idea, but he's going to give it a go. He takes her into the canoodling corner. He says that Jess said Ellie was fishy. He says they were screaming and ripping up the backyard when they found out she was coming back. And he proposes a final three of himself, Ellie, and Luke.
It's interesting that Josh never tries to covet the other two girls. We never see Josh strat chatting with the other two girls. We never see Josh trying to recruit the other two girls. Similarly, the girls don't try to recruit him, although arguably they are two, so they're not the ones that should have to do the work. He should be coming after them. But it's interesting, for as much as he sees Ellie as a threat, he's constantly going back to Ellie. He never tries to get the other two girls to work with him.
Ellie does take the women into the canoodling corner to confirm their alliance. Jess and Imogen readily agree, but then agree with each other later that she's lying.
Yes, there's a lot of suspicion now between the three girls. They all don't trust each other, but nobody is saying it to each other's face. Everybody is pretending we're still a girls' alliance. We're still here to target the boys. I'll always have your back. I'll never vote you out. But everybody is lying to everybody.
Well, this is the game.
Yes. Alan Rickman, by the way.
Alan Rickman!
For all of you who would have been screaming into your headphones, Alan Rickman. So the thing about Ellie is she, I've been thinking about this. What do you think? From an edgy perspective, I wonder if Ellie is our winner pick because she is the only one seen consistently talking about her charity. When she talks about wanting to win, she's always talking about wanting to win for her charity. Now, the others don't necessarily talk about wanting to win for themselves, but if they talk about winning, rarely is the charity mentioned, if at all. She is the one who is constantly, we all know which charity Ellie is donating to, which is Australia Zoo, Wildlife Warriors. It's the Steve Irwin charity that is set up in Queensland. So I wonder if this is kind of a setup to show us that Ellie's going to make it all the way to the end and this is where the money is going to go.
That's interesting. I'm not very good at reading edits, but that makes sense to me. And also because I want it to be true because she was my winner pick. So I have a bias there.
So we've got another secret mission.
This is so stupid. Do we even have to talk about it? I'm going to go into the backyard and throw things around. I don't even. You talk about it, and I will stick my fingers in my ear and go la 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 while you're doing it.
Tom has to use Aussie slang. He has to drop it into normal conversation, and if he does that, they will get letters from home. So he does it. It's not very interesting. It's also very cliche, old school mateship style Aussie slang. He has to say dead set rip snorter. going troppo in Whoop Whoop and fair dinkum, she'll be right, which he does. Everybody gives him some weird looks, but eventually they figure out that actually it was all just part of this secret mission, and the housemates are given their letters from home, including, I love this consistent theme with Luke. Luke gets his letter on Barbie paper.
It's the very nicely we talked about before of everybody reading their letters out to each other. It's hardly riveting television, but what it does do is bring the group together after the sort of the fractured one leaving, surprise two leaving, surprise they're both back, surprise one of them's leaving. So it is a very nice way to bring them all together, have them be compassionate and kind to each other. I mean, do you think that if Tom, I mean, I don't even know how he was supposed to be caught doing it. I mean, the housemates were certainly puzzled when he was saying these phrases. I don't quite know what the condition, the lose conditions were for him. Anyway, some way or another, Big Brother was going to get these letters to the housemates, and I think at exactly the right time.
Oh, look, I feel like this is the sort of thing that in a writer's room might have felt like it would be hilarious to get this American to say these very Aussie phrases. Didn't really translate on screen, unfortunately. Really wasn't that funny. You could almost have edited that whole section out, I think.
And then the letters could have just arrived, yes. Do you say any of those things? I mean, the only thing I would say, and I can't even think of, I would say dead set, as in you're a dead set ledge, but I wouldn't say any of the others.
Whoop whoop. I wouldn't say the guy in Troppo, but I live in Whoop Whoop, so that might be something I might say. But yeah. Apart from that, no, nothing else.
Whoop whoop. All right. So now we go to the next nomination challenge. BB, Big Brother says it's huge because there are two challenges today. And once one challenge has been run and there's a winner, they will immediately nominate someone. And if you are nominated in that first challenge, you cannot compete in the second challenge.
Yeah, this is starting to get complicated. I did, when they were initially talking about the rules for this, I was somewhat lost, but it all resolved itself as it played out. So I just felt this was probably unnecessarily complicated. Wouldn't you just let the nominees be the first person and then the second person to win the challenge?
The nominating people?
Yeah.
Yes, they
Sorry,
are.
But nominators.
Yeah, nominators. Sorry, excuse me. I liked it. I liked
Did
it.
Did you?
I like crushing that first nominated person's hopes. Because the problem is if you're nominated and then you go ahead and win the second challenge, that's awkward. So in terms of the way the game's played, oh, you're saying play both challenges, find out who the two nominators are and then nominate? Yeah, I suppose so. I found this as straightforward as sort of anything that Big Brother does in this week as far as it goes. So the first challenge is in pairs. They get to pick their own pairs. It's Imogen and Jess, no surprises. Ellie and Luke, no surprises. Josh and Tom, that's pretty straightforward. They have to stack champagne coupes on a sliding tray between them, so they have to slide the tray backwards and forwards. They have 21 glasses. They have to get six levels high. It's pretty straightforward. Sliding backwards and forwards, falling, what's the best way architecturally. But Imogen and Jess win and they nominate. Not Ellie. Ellie's sure she's going to be nominated, but they nominate.
I was going to say, they nominate Tom, and I thought this was incredibly clever, that the fact that they wanted to nominate Ellie, but they did not want to be seen to be turning on the alliance, so they thought if they nominated Tom, that would knock Tom out of the next challenge, meaning that Luke or Josh would be competing in the next challenge, and hope that if Luke or Josh won, that they would then nominate Ellie and do the dirty work for them.
I thought that was really smart, extremely clever. Yeah. They really are playing. Thomas is nominated. The women have a chat. Ellie says if she wins, they should put up Josh.
Yep. So now we go into the second challenge. They only get a 45-minute break in between them. And this one is the red carpet suspension bridge. So they have to find a way to get across this bridge that flips over quite easily. It's dressed up like a red carpet, and they have to carry puzzle pieces. And when they get to the other side and all the puzzle pieces are there, they then have to complete a puzzle, which is a shot of their own face.
Now, this, point of order, puzzle makers, this is not fair. Each puzzle should be exactly the same. Because it's their own faces, they obviously are slightly different. Ellie, who was just behind Luke wins. Ellie had three, so it's a nine-square sliding puzzle that you slide in from the side. Ellie had three squares that were just yellow because in the photograph she's wearing a yellow top and they didn't fit in the wrong place. In other words, they had to be in the right place. And this made me think this is actually not fair. All the puzzles should be the same, whether they did a meld of their six faces or whether they, I don't know how they would like to do it. I think they thought it was a good idea, but it does actually put some unfairness on the game in terms of them making puzzles that were not the same.
Yeah, that is quite true, because depending on what you were wearing, for instance, I know Imogen was wearing a necklace, which I was thinking as somebody who has become addicted to puzzles in the lockdown, I was thinking I would have made the necklace first because that was a really defining feature of her portrait. So, yeah, that's a very fair point that I hadn't thought of. My little note here says, is this the easiest puzzle we have ever seen on reality TV?
Yes. It's a short answer. Yes.
And so here we see my favourite Luke Tokey again, challenge beast. He is a beat or two behind Ellie throughout the whole challenge and right at the end he pushes through and passes her to win by literally seconds. So amazing work by both of them because Ellie was really, you know, busting her chops and was looking quite dominant throughout the challenge. But in the end, yep, sadly, the puzzle was her undoing. And I do think your point about them being different puzzles and so therefore unfair is a very valid one.
Luke goes into the diary room to nominate and he says, now it's time to put the old dog down. A little bit harsh there, Luke.
Yeah, that is poor old Tom. He's not even that old, is he?
No, he's not that old. Yeah, certainly he's younger than me. And meanwhile, Josh is saying that Luke is a loose cannon. That's an interesting way of describing him. Housemates come to the lounge room and Big Brother announces that the nominee is Ellie. Tom is very pleased. He thinks that Luke is will keep him safe and has nominated Ellie as a bit of a slam dunk. Luke takes Ellie into the canoodling corner and he explains that he wants Tom gone and Luke says he himself will talk to the girls.
Yeah, I'm curious what you think about this move, Sarah. I do not understand why Luke would want to get rid of Tom here. Tom is a loyal player. He doesn't strategize. He's not likely to go off and make moves behind your back. He's also not likely to win any votes at the end from the audience. The external audience who's voting for the winner is not going to vote for this guy who has spent the whole show dissing Meghan Markle. And so I really don't know why you would choose to bring Ellie, who is a far more dangerous player and potentially win immunities, why you would bring Ellie instead of Tom.
Well, and also, yes, I mean, just a brutal fact, Australian audiences are not going to vote for the American at the end. So Tom is a perfect person to bring with you. It's Jess and Imogen who nominated Tom, I thought very good strategically. I thought Luke had nominated Ellie to get rid of Ellie, quite frankly, at this point.
I think Luke nominated Ellie to show the girls that he was with them.
So I like that, yes.
So I feel like Luke did put her up as a safe vote because he knew he was never going to vote for her. He thought he could flip the girls, but it was a way to signal to Ellie and to Josh and to Jess and to Imogen that he's with them. It's also a way to make it look to Tom like he's with Tom while he's actually backstabbing Tom so that Tom would have no motivation to want to flip on Luke. Not that I think Tom would do that anyway.
Well, yes, I mean, we're not expecting Tom to do any scrambling at all. But, yes, so Tom feels completely safe and does sort of negative scrambling.
Yeah, Tom's very passive in terms of the gameplay. at one point, and I can't remember if it's here, where he actually says that he's just going to let Luke do it all for him.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's very much from a strategy perspective, it is Tom's time to go. Personally, I feel like the right move from Luke's perspective would have been to keep Tom, but I guess we'll see how that all plays out next week. I was also interested to see how much Tom was loved when he was voted out. I mean, people in the house dearly love Tom, and I think it's unfortunate that he clearly has a personality and he clearly went into the show to show a different side of himself, and the edit has chosen to basically show us none of that. We have not really got to know him at all. I found out just from Instagram yesterday that he has grandkids and kids, and I would have loved to know more about that. Would have loved to know about if he has a partner, what he does for work. He seemed like a genuine, nice person. He was funny, and I feel like we could have got to know more about him, and I would be curious to know what his reaction was to the edit, having gone through all of that experience, to then find that actually all they showed was stuff about Meghan Markle.
Yes, I mean, despite the fact that it's a 4-0 vote, everybody piles on Tom, the departure seems very genuine. There's a few sorries and there's hugs, and so he's on his way. Yeah, so that was quite a big week. I mean, they all feel like big weeks, I think, when you're talking about 3 or 4 hours of television and all the ins and outs. It always feels a bit big. We have a couple of questions from our listeners. RHAP patron Dave Backer says, it seems like the remaining VIPs have been playing harder the last few episodes. Is this because of their competitiveness? Is it because they realise they're getting closer to winning the money for charity? How much of an influence has Luke been on this ramped up play? What do you think, Amy?
Yeah, to me, I don't think the ramped up play is about Luke. I think that the players don't realise how hard Luke is playing. I think he's playing so cleverly that they know he's making moves, but I don't think they really can see exactly what he's doing in the way that we see it as viewers. I think the ramped up play is coming from being close to the end, and I really think that that whole scene where Jess saw Ellie strategizing and mistook it as her flipping was what kind of triggered all of that. I think it's seeing each other playing as a whole household, not just Luke, that has started all of this. And if anything, I would say the fact that Luke has never been nominated suggests to me that the one person that they all think isn't playing that hard is Luke.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Yeah, they all think they have Luke in their pocket when actually Luke is using them all and playing them all off against each other, and they don't know that.
Yes, I mean, it's wonderful, subtle play from Luke. And I agree with you. I think particularly for Jess, it was being stung by Dane, dissing her livelihood. Like, really, it's not just saying Instagram silly to somebody who uses Instagram. It's someone saying your very livelihood and the way that you live is silly, which Dane decided not to understand that he was what he was saying. And as you said, Jess was not able to articulate to him what he was saying. She tried in various ways. We certainly heard her. So I think that set her off. Then the Ellie overheard with Dane, so she started playing. I think that's the ramp up that we're seeing. Tom has never played, so that's fine. Josh played last week and sort of seems to be coasting a little bit. Luke is the one that's consistently played, and Ellie, we discussed perhaps a little bit too hard. But I think the end being in sight, particularly when you go from 7 to 5, when you have a double elimination, you actually all go up 2 places, and that's kind of a bit of a jolt, and I think that's where it comes from. So thanks for that question, Dave. Now, RHAP patron and friend of the podcast, Jay DeBrow, has a question. They ask, what foods would you be craving in the BB hotel? What would you be craving if you were there, VIP Amy?
Yeah, it's interesting because all the things they talk about are kind of snack foods. I mean, why are they so obsessed with processed cheese? Cheese stringers, Flaming Hot Cheetos, processed cheese seems to be a bit of a thing. For me, I personally like hot food. I like hot meals. I think it's interesting that apart from when they win it, we never actually see them sit down to eat a hot meal together, like sit down and eat a pasta or sit down and eat some noodles or whatever it is. That's my kind of food. So that lovely kind of, roast, I think it was, or was it lamb cutlets or something that came to Jess when she was on her secret mission in the diary room. That's the kind of thing I would be asking for. Roasts, big pastas, lasagnas, big bowls of noodles, hot food, not flaming hot Cheetos and processed cheese. What about you, Sarah?
Well, I hate to align myself with Josh in any way, but Mexican. I like the crunchy. I like the spicy. I like the interplay of textures. I like the warm, the cold, the hot, the sides that you put on. Oof, delicious. Otherwise, lentil soup. I like a nice lentil soup, and I make one from Bill's Sydney Kitchen, the original cookbook, which you may remember. Anyone that lives in Sydney knows Bill. And this is a lentil soup that I have inflicted on teenagers who turn their noses up and then ask for another bowl. It's magic. This soup is magic. I might have to make some today.
I know this is an audio podcast, so you guys can't see my face, but I'm making faces at Sarah like what my children would make at me if I were to say, we're going to eat lentil soup. I love soup. My friends will tell you I'm obsessed with soup. Even I'm like, geez, lentil soup. That's not a comfort item that you crave inside a VIP hotel.
I will send you the recipe. You'll be absolutely amazed. Yeah, I'm a bit of a soup head as well.
Done. Post it. Post it on social media. Then we can all make it and we can all have soup next week when we're watching the finale.
Or Mexican food. Now, I felt that the fashions on the field this week were a little slim pickings, but I did manage to get a couple of commended. Ellie's elimination gown, she was in a red elimination gown, which was the same as her powder blue bodycon from the week before, but it just had a very nice trumpet sleeve, slit sleeve. The fact that she had to wear it while in a spin class made it even better, so that's a commended. And Jess at one point wore a pretty apricot sun frock for Dane's second elimination. But my best on ground goes to Jess. Jess, in the Tom elimination, she wears a black funnel neck rogue hoodie, black capri pants and white trainers. She has scraped back hair and a neutral lip. I liked it so much. And one of the things that was so right about this outfit for her, she's quite tiny and her proportions were absolutely right in this outfit. So best on ground from me for Jess's black outfit for the Thomas elimination. What about you?
For me, my two best looks were both from Imogen. I love her when she's wearing the sort of the more classic, more glamorous and moving away from the cowboy LEG blinged up look. I loved what she wore for Tom's elimination, which is that ruffled bronze number. It's a really shimmery dress with a high pony, very low cut at the front with a V-neck. It was stunning. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. I thought she really did herself a disservice by referring to it as a clown suit because it was extremely elegant. But my favourite look of the week would have to be what she wore at the Ellie elimination, where she had on the blue dress. It had one bare shoulder, one really high slit down the side. She had the beautifully blow-dried Farrah Fawcett sort of swept hair. I thought it was stunning. I want to see more of those kind of classic red carpet looks from her. That is much more something that appeals to me rather than that kind of street look that she seems to kind of revert to.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait for their finale outfits, which, who knows where they're what heights we will see from them. Maybe the boys might, I don't know, wash their faces or something. Now, predictions. So far, we have signally failed to predict a single event in any of the episodes. So I'm hesitating to ask for our predictions, but you know what? I'm going to be bold. What are your predictions for next week?
So for me, based on Edgic, I think the final two, well, actually, you tell me, what is the format? Because I do not know enough about Big Brother to know what the format is going to be. So maybe let's start there.
Well, with the VIP, I don't know quite how they're going to do it. My guess would be one elimination on Monday, one elimination on Tuesday, and a final three with the audience vote.
Okay, sure. Yeah, okay. So for me, the definite At least two of the final three, I can predict, I feel, are going to be Ellie and Luke. And the main reason why I say that is because these are the only two celebrities we've heard talk in any substance about their charity. They've talked about it the numerous times, and I think that that is an indication that the money is going to go to one of those charities. I don't know which one. My feeling would be that Ellie is likely to be the winner. She has had such a strong edit. I think the story of her being such a, you know, a slight, tiny model and coming out to be such a challenge beast, such a strong strategic player, such a force within the house and such a force within the game will translate really well to the outside audience. So they would be my top two. As for who the number three is going to be, I'm not really sure. What about you, Sarah?
Yes, I have those exact same two, Ellie and Luke. I would find it hard to think of who will actually win. I have a feeling it might be Ellie, partly for the reasons that you've said, also because for Luke, it's the money's not going to him, and I think that might have an effect. But I definitely think they're final two, and then my third in the final three is Jess.
Interesting. Why do you say Jess?
I think that the next person to go out is going to be Josh, and then the one after that will be Imogen. I think leaving Jess rather than Jess actively getting there, I think that Josh will be the next one to go now that Luke has really come out as being allied with the women, and then Imogen will be the next to go.
Interesting. I would have thought the move for Luke would be to break up the girls, break up Imogen and Jess so that you don't have that two voting together.
I suppose it depends who's nominating. So you think he would nominate the two of them if he had the opportunity?
That's what I would do, because that's the power couple right now, because, you know, they vote as a block. So I would break that up first. To me, that seems the biggest threat.
Right. I wonder if everybody thinks that. That is intriguing. I don't think that Josh is a chance to win, so perhaps it's safe to take him to the final.
Yeah, that's true too. That is true.
Well, let's see if we get a 100% record and everything that we're saying now doesn't happen. We'll find out this time next week. Now, it's the middle of November, but it's always a good time to become a patron of RHAP. You get access to lots of patron benefits, including at the moment there's a weekly Q&A show on Survivor 41 and lots of the RHAP podcasters are popping up to talk with Rob and to take your questions. That's always a good time. You get the patron 5 to 5 with the First Lady of Podcasting and Rob having a chat about any manner of things. There's a huge community on the Facebook and the Discord for RHAP. And then there are events like trivia and brand steals and various other things. And if you were already a patron, you might be part of the worldwide gift giving that's going on. Also, you support all the shows that are on RHAP, including the one that you're listening to right now. So you would go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. And you can read all about it there. Don't believe me? Go and do your own research. I know that we're doing our own research these days. Amy, what's happening for you at the moment?
So if you didn't hear it last week, Kids Pod just released an episode with Brian Koppelman, who is one of the creators of Billions and Ocean's 13, where he talks about what it's like to be an adult with ADHD. So if that's something that interests you, please subscribe to my podcast, Kids Pod. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Survivor Tragic. I've got some children's books out at the moment, so if you're doing Christmas shopping, please consider buying one of those to support me and as little gifts for any little people in your life.
Wonderful. You can follow me at Sarah Carradine on Twitter and posting things like lentil soup recipes. So if that lifts your skirt, give me a follow there.
I just can't even imagine what my children are going to say when I put that on the dinner table.
Guarantee, I've turned teenagers with it. It's a powerful potion. All right, Amy, it's time to go. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.